He said, God has a date for us. And I feel like the whole morning, even our worship, just adoring Jesus. Tien's hit it on the head. He has a date for us. So my title this morning is, Are You in the Arena? And I think the older you get, I'm 50 now, the more history fascinates you. Like we in our 20s or teenage years, I don't think history's just out there. But the older we get, I think the more we get fascinated by what's happened in the past. And so one of the people I want to just quote on was the 26th president of the United States back in 1901, long time ago, Theodore Roosevelt. And it's a famous quote, so I'm sure most of you would have heard it. It's a bit wordy, but stick with me. He says, it is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust, sweat, and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there's no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows the great euphemisms, the great devotions, who spends himself on a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, or who at worst knows, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those whose cold and timid souls would never know victory or defeat. That's a powerful quote. It's not the critic who counts. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, but actually strives to do the deeds. So this morning, I'd like you to picture the scene. A massive arena. Crowds around. Noise. Opinions. Criticizing, shouting, and there below is the one person in the dirt. The one person standing in the dirt, sweating, fighting, and struggling. The crowd's comfortable, but the person in the arena, he's exposed. He's alone. He's vulnerable. He's risked it all. And Roosevelt says the credit doesn't go to the crowd. It goes to the one in the arena. So church today, we have many of us sitting here, and with grace and with love, many of us can watch others pray. We can watch others step out in faith. We can watch others get used by God, like Jaden this morning, did a fantastic job. But we can watch others. The challenge is God didn't call you and me to watch. He called you to be in the arena. And it's in the arena, not in the crowds, it's in the arena where you'll find his heart. Because in the arena, when we find his heart, we'll hear him, we'll hear his heart, like John, resting on the chest of Jesus. We'll hear his heart beating for the church. Doo-doof, doo-doof. And then we'll hear it beating for the world, for those screaming in the grandstands. And yet he's called us to be in the arena. So today we're going to go on a gospel story where I've been entrusted to take you on this journey. And I think the privilege we get of getting older, being dads and moms, is that we get to watch our families grow. We get to shape our families. And I think the same in the church. We come here to get in the arena to get shaped. Because it's so easy to stay in the bleachers and no one's going to know. No one's going to know that my kids are wild and unruly and breaking down the house. But if I get in the arena, someone will come to my house and see my kids. Not that they do, but an example. That, and we get shaped that way. And as we're in the arena, we get to have conversations with other people in the arena. We get to find out, sure, Cheryl, how did you overcome that? How did you win at that? Because in the stands, you're not going to have any of those conversations because everyone's just shouting. In the arenas where we get to rub shoulders with people and have calling conversations, I think the scary reality with our kids today, I think kids arrive at junior school and you already start telling them that they're going to do really, really well in junior school so that they can get into a good high school. And they would do really, really well in a high school so they're going to get a good university, go to a really good university to get a good job, to buy the house, have the picket fence. That's kind of what the world's doing in the bleachers. But in the arena, we get to have calling conversations. We get to find out what is God wanting. Sorry, Cheryl, you're sitting right here. I'm going to pick up. What is God wanting for Cheryl? What is that conversation? What is God wanting for Ethan? Is it just to get through the journey, have the picket fenced, and move on? And did I just call you Ethan? Oh, sorry. I won't do that again, Jaden. Yeah, you set the tone. We don't want to just have light conversations. It's, what is the destiny? So my first scripture, are you in the arena? And the first arena that we have is the arena of courage. If I can have Daniel 6 up there, please. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid at the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of the lords, and nothing to be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and he slept and fled from him. Then, at break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the lion's den. As he came to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, "O Daniel, my servant of the living God, has your God, with whom you've continually been able to deliver you from the lions?" And Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angels and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, because I was found blameless before him, and also before you, O king. I've done no harm." So Daniel's story: the king at the time, King Darius, received some bad counsel. There were some jealous Persians who plotted against him, and we can apply this to our own lives, our own journeys we go on. And Daniel wanted to serve the Lord. He wasn't young anymore. The nice thing about the internet, I Googled how old he was, and they say he was about 80, 85 years of age. And we have a lot of people older in our congregation, not quite at the 80 mark, but imagine at the age of 80, 85, thrown into a lion's den for the night, alone. Daniel had lived his life faithfully. He had served God continuously, and suddenly it changed. How would you respond in that moment? What courage would you have? No prayer, no worship, no God. But Daniel chose. The darkness of the stone rolled in front of him, alone. All he must have heard must be the breathing of the predators. The breathing of the predators. And he sat with courage, alone in the den. No applause of man. No crowd jeering, alone. Just Daniel in the danger. Where's God now? Because sometimes God doesn't stop our situation. We want him to. Weekly, daily, we want him to stop the situation. But instead, he shows up in the situation. And that's what we need to be seeking. The king runs out, "Daniel, your God has saved you." Daniel's response, "My God has sent an angel to protect me." Such was his trust in the Lord. God didn't keep him from the lion's den. He shut the mouths of the lions. And I think for some of us, we feel like we're in the lion's den every now and then. God, why am I going through this? Wanting God to shut the lion's den, but it's in that space he shows up. God shows his power in our situation, not outside of it. The second arena is the arena of conviction. And the text there is out of Daniel 3 as well, and we won't read it, but Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are placed in the fire. And actually, can we put up verse 6? Oh, you've put it up. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If it be so, our God with whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hands, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image you have set up. The scene shifts because there's a massive statue, music playing, the crowds, everyone bowing except three men. They standing while everyone else is compromising. Bring it into today's terms, everyone else is doing it. Everyone else is going along with the culture. Everyone else is choosing comfort. But these three, they stand. They're brought before the king. He listens to their words, but he has no choice. But their words are, even if God does not deliver us, we serve him. And that's not a convenient faith. It's not an emotional faith. It's a conviction. Even if, and I think we can close our eyes and try and put ourselves in that moment. I don't know how many of us, myself included, would be, I'm ready to get into this furnace and die. Because King Alan is still on the throne and he hasn't stepped off. The guards can't even get close to chuck them in. But eventually they're thrown in, bound, helpless, surrounded by flames. And there's a fourth person in the room, the Son of God. When we stand with God in the arena, he steps in. And I think in the arena, we face pressure. The furnace, there was pressure. The temptation to bail. Fear. Just overwhelming fear. Compromise. But will you stand at all costs? And I think their prayers, God, help me stand. And us in the arena today, God, help us stand. Then the third arena and the last one, the arena of surrender. The arena of surrender. In Acts 9, verse 3, it's the story of Paul on the road to Damascus. Now, as he went on his way, he approached Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. And falling to the ground, he heard a voice say to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he said, Who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus who you are persecuting. But rise and enter the city, and you will be told what to do. So this is different because Daniel didn't choose the den. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't choose the fire. But Saul created his own arena. He was the one breathing the threats. Serve Jesus, you die. He was the one bringing persecution. He was the one hunting the believers. Last night I just sat as I was going over my notes, just thinking, imagine what it would have been like knowing word gets out, Saul's arrived in town. What's our response? Because he's there to kill you. Saul also thinks he's right in his arena. He's convinced he's right. He walks around with pride and in control until the road of Damascus. A light from heaven, he falls to the ground and gets challenged, Saul, why are you persecuting me? In that moment, everything stops, everything changes. And he asks, Lord, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? And the answer is to surrender. When I'm the hunter, causing the chaos around, this call is for me to surrender. Not God just bless my plans, but God come and interrupt my plans. Saul was on a set journey, but God came, interrupted it, turned it around. Some of us don't want to be in the arena, and God's calling us to be in that arena. Because in the arena, we don't have control. Outside of the arena, in the bleachers, I know where the exit gates are. I know where the car's parked. I can run. In the arena, there is no exit. In the arena, we do it on God's terms, not my terms. And Saul had to learn that in surrendering. And for some of us this morning, and there's been such a beautiful theme this morning of God wanting a date with us. He's calling for surrender from us. Daniel had courage. The three had conviction. And Saul had to surrender. And the question I'm going to end with, are you going to step in or are you going to stay out? Are you going to come in? Those in the lion's den, those in the fire, and those that need to surrender. The crowd will always watch. The crowd will always watch. But today there's an opportunity that heaven and history will know that it's different.